Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Shri Vishnu Sahasranama. Next name we have to take up is name number 419, Kala, which means time. Kalosmi, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna asks who he is, he says, I am time. And Krishna specifically refers to time as the principle of destruction. Time is one of those phenomena which everyone knows what it is, but no one knows what it is. If you try to define it, it's very difficult to define. There are some other things like that, such as, everyone knows if we say the mind, we have an idea. Everyone has an idea when we say the mind, but if we try to understand it more clearly and deeply, we'll find it's very difficult to define it. And there are several phenomena like that. And actually anything, if we try to understand what it is, we can only understand anything or any phenomena in relation to others. For instance, if you say, what's this? Well, this is a table. What is a table? It's an object formed in a certain way for placing things on. A specific way to describe what do you mean by other things? And then you just go on and on and on, and you go on ad infinitum. Which philosophically we can understand there is some basic substratum of everything. That is Krishna. That is specifically as Brahman, his impersonal feature. Time is also described in Shastra, in Srimad Bhagavatam, as the impersonal feature of the Lord. Very difficult to define, and theoretically it doesn't exist at all. Just like, for instance, the same as a point in space. As soon as we conceive of it, or if we try to draw it on a piece of paper, then it has some dimension. So doesn't exist. A point has no, we can say it's a location, but as soon as you say it's in a specific place, then it's occupying some space and it's not a point. Of course, we think of a point as something very small, but in the complete definition or the mathematical definition, it has no dimension whatsoever. So similarly, time, as soon as you say this moment in time, is gone. A moment is so, you can't define it at all. Another strange thing about time is that whatever is in the past is fixed, it can't be changed whatsoever. And whatever's in the future, beginning from one moment in advance, there are unlimited possibilities about what could happen. So it's all very mysterious. We take it for granted, but everything happens within time and also within space. Einstein, who Rasaraj Prabhu once said to me was matter realized. But I wonder how you can be matter realized without being God realized, because matter is dependent upon God. But then matter, ultimately matter is... matter is dependent on, it's another thing, what is matter? It's all a manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. And Einstein spoke of space-time continuum, that space and time are the same thing, although we can't imagine them being the same, but they're actually the same. Everything happens within space and time. There can't be space without time. There can't be existence without time. There can't be time without matter. So these are all very perplexing philosophical subjects if we try to understand. At some point in time, if I get round to it, one of the several things I'd like to investigate philosophically, see what all the different people say about it. One very big topic is time. It's inconceivable. It's actually inconceivable. We just take it for granted, but it's inconceivable. Presumably, according to the scientists who believe, oops, you're not supposed to say that in science, but anyway, they believe in the theory of the Big Bang. So before the Big Bang, there was no time. There was no time, and there was no space. It's inconceivable how there could be such a state. But then, in no time and no space, nothing exploded. If there was no space, then there can't be time also, because even, at least in this world, time is contingent upon movement, which our friends, the scientists, discovered, but which is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the smallest measure of time is that in which it takes an atom to cross another atom. Of course, theoretically, that could be further divided into units of time. It's all avang manasagochara. It's beyond our ability to understand or properly describe. But time is Krishna. That's it, simple. Which we cannot understand. And even if we attempt to understand the question of what is time, probably from the outset, if we are honest about it, we'll understand that it's inconceivable and we'll never be able to understand it. Because the very concept of time is beyond our ability to understand. Again, we just take it as a very ordinary thing, but as soon as we start to think about it, we find that it will always be beyond our ability to understand as we are within it. And it's so much intrinsic to our existence as we understand it. So there are two ways philosophically to... Oh, no, it's a big discussion here. There are two ways philosophically to... Or we can see two philosophical conclusions, at least I can see two philosophical conclusions at the end of this. That either all existence is illusory and therefore the ultimate state of existence is where there's no space and there's no time. That's where all the Buddhists were there before the Big Bang. They were all just being non-existent. Well, anyway, there are different Buddhists. And anyway, we can say that at least in this Kali Yuga, that Buddhists have perfected the art of mental speculation. They're really very... the various schools of Buddhism are champions. They're really, really expert mental speculators. They come up with some really far out, to use that hippie term, mental speculations. So either you end up, there's nothing, or there's Krishna. Well, there's the impersonal, you can say the impersonal Brahman. But well, we accept there is Krishna. Either there's no meaning or there is meaning. And what is the meaning of Krishna? Love is supreme. So Kala, in the material existence, Krishna is Kala, the principle by which everything comes into being. Everything is sustained and everything is destroyed. These are all actions within time. So Krishna, the time is the impersonal feature of the Lord. So there we have it. Yato va imani bhutani jayanti. Yena jatani jivanti. Yat prayatya bisangvishanti tad vijigyasasva tad brahmeti. Now, what is the ultimate supreme? What is the absolute truth? That from which everything emanates, that in which everything exists, that which everything enters into, ultimately, that is the proper subject for inquiry, that is Brahma. So we can say Brahma, there's time also, because time fits the same description. However, within the same Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, the same verse is given, but in relation to Ananda. So, as Sri Ramanuja was the first in this Kali Yuga to explicate, this is not all simply some impersonal understanding. This is Vishnu. It's not just some undefined force that is going on with no particular meaning. There's no meaning in this world, but there's the ultimate meaning is Ananda, as I heard Srila Prabhupada say how many years ago? 39 years ago. When he was asked, what is the purpose of life? Srila Prabhupada replied, to enjoy. So time in this real time is in the spiritual world, which facilitates Krishna's enjoyment. In this material world, time is that dimension by which everything is destroyed. Although everything is created in this material world within time, the Shastra and the Acharyas and Krishna himself generally describe time as that which destroys rather than that which facilitates creation. Because destruction is it's more characteristic of the material world. The creation, that is necessary. For there to be destruction, and it's a cycle, again, time, cycle. But the destruction is more characteristic, because this is the place of suffering. The creation brings hope. Destruction brings hopelessness. So that is the nature of this material world, is a place of suffering. So time in this material world is that feature, that dimension which causes suffering. Of course, ultimately the suffering is caused by the living beings themselves and their rebelliousness to Krishna. But that is affected by the time factor, which in the mode of passion there is creation and there's hope of enjoyment. But ultimately that comes to the despair of destruction. And destruction is more characteristic of this world because it goes on all the time. There are four kinds of destruction described in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, among which one of them is nitya. It's always going on at every moment. At every moment some living being is being destroyed. The very nature of time is that once it's gone, one moment is gone, it's gone. Our bodies are aging and hurtling toward death at every moment. We say Srishti, Stiti, Pralay. There is creation, maintenance, and destruction. But maintenance is maintaining a state of ongoing, slow destruction. That is what it is, actually. That is typical of this world. But the spiritual world, time is also there. But there's no destruction. Time is the medium that facilitates Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna, I saw in a book written by a Christian theologian as a retort to Dawkins and company. There are many books being written, or have been written in the last few years. So in that, he wrote that we have to accept, if we're going to accept a definition of God, there are some things that God can't do, and one of them is to change the past. Let's think about that one. Oh. I think a cat's on the Vyasa-san over there. Little kitten. Have some milk? Sounds like the kitty's looking for milk. Looking for her mother, probably. So can God change the past? That's one have to think about. Well, he can do anything. He can definitely change the present. There's no time. And what is time? That's measured by the movements of the various bodies, beginning from the smallest up to the biggest. It's all right, don't chase the cat, as long as it's it or she or he has stopped meowing. What's the Tamil word for meow? Huh? They also say meow. I borrowed that from English cats, probably. Or maybe the English cats borrowed it from Tamil cats. Anyway, it's a very, very vast subject to try to understand what is time. But very simply, we can say time is Krishna. And that means everything we can't understand, we can say that is Krishna. Now, that's one of Dawkins, the infamous Richard Dawkins, taunts against theists. He talks about the God of the gaps. He said, when you can't understand anything, you say it must be caused by God or some supernatural means. Just like, for instance, he says that, well, it used to be when people got sick, they would pray to God, or they'd say it's caused by God or some gods. But now we understand that disease are caused by germs, and we give vaccines, and we give medicines, and we heal the diseases, or some of them. As I said, nowadays you don't people, when they want to get healed from a disease, they don't pray to some god, but they go to the doctor. And when the doctor doesn't cure them, they go to God. He didn't add that piece. So he talks of the God of the gaps. So we don't understand how something works. We say it's done by God. Stop chasing the cat and come and listen to the class. He can't hear because he's listening to some other class on here. Yes. Maybe caused by germs, but dear Mr. Dawkins, one thing... In philosophy, we should understand there are causes, and there are causes of causes, and there are causes of causes of causes, and Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. The germ causes the disease. The germs exist because we perform sinful activities. And the germ is a manifestation of sinful activities. And of course, not all diseases are caused by jhanas. Seeing something Dawkins was talking about, how the people, they go for all these different kinds of cures, they don't trust science, all the diseases are caused by germs. He doesn't even know any basic thing. There are many diseases which are not, according to modern medicine, caused by germs at all. They're not. It's disease like smallpox and mumps and measles may be caused by germs, but diseases like arthritis, they're not caused by viruses or any such thing. Anyway, that's another topic. So yeah, the God of the gaps. But hey, you know what? You can go on doing scientific research on and on and on over generations and generations, and there'll always be gaps. You'll never discover everything. It's not possible. It's the very nature of knowledge in this world is that it cannot be all-inclusive, because as soon as you understand something, then you want to know what's the cause of that, what's the nature of it. And you may think you've understood it, but then after some more time you understand, well, you didn't understand it. Just like so-called atoms, for instance. They're called atom. Atom, the derivation of that word, it means the smallest possible particle. But then they understood it's not what they thought was the smallest, is not the smallest. And yeah, it was thought that physics was a closed subject. All the basic principles are understood. Actually, atoms, the existence of atoms, weren't even verified until the beginning of the 20th century by Albert Einstein, by the way, what they call atoms. So whatever we think we know, then later on we find we don't know, and it goes on and on and on and on, because for every cause, there's another cause. But even in logic, there cannot be an infinite regress in the real world. Maybe in the imagination there can be. That's another term which everyone knows what it means, but no one can really define it. Consciousness. That's another term. So the infinite regress cannot exist in reality. So again, either we go to shunyata and say, well, everything is nothing, nothing really exists, or we come to sarva karana karanam, which is, anyone? Krishna! Come on, I'm supposed to know that. I have to try and keep everyone awake here. Okay, Kala, here are some of the meanings given by the Acharyas. He who draws everything toward himself. In other words, who's all attractive. But this means well, that can mean he draws everything toward himself, just at the time of annihilation of the universe. Everything enters into him. Yat prayatya bisang vishanti. Everything ultimately enters into him. This means Vishnu. But then there is also, by his qualities, he attracts everyone to himself. Krishna, that's the meaning of Krishna. Kala. He who measures and sets a limit to everything. So time, everything can be measured only within time, and everything is limited by time. Utashishai trivita sima. Ulangita trivita sima utashishai. This Yamunacharya speaks about the three limits which Krishna is beyond. The three limiting factors are space, time, and thought. So Krishna is beyond all of these. See, our acharyas, they're not just sentimentalists, as some people think. They're simply praising Krishna, dancing with his ankle bells, but very deep philosophical understanding also. Kala Kalayatamaham, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. This is Shankaracharya, he gives this as a reference. That which gives a limit to everything. Everything in this world is limited. However powerful one may think he is, then that is limited by time. It will come to an end. That's why Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to be immortal. And there's no meaning to being all powerful unless you're immortal. You can control, theoretically, someone can control the whole world, but it must come to an end. All things must pass. Famous words from the Bible. All things must pass. But Krishna doesn't. Krishna doesn't end. Every existence must end. But Krishna doesn't end. So he is the principle governing that which limits everything else. He is the, when we say the principle, we mean that which makes it exist. That is non-different from it. Without which time cannot be, that is Krishna. Kala is also a term often used in Sanskrit literature and in the vernacular Indian languages, which are based on Sanskrit also, to mean death. And also to mean fate by the influence of time. It's commonly seen. You'll find in Bhagavatam and everywhere else. Kala Prabhavi, that would be in Bengali. By the influence of time. We see, just like for instance, Narad Muni. He says, by the influence of time, my mother was bitten by a snake and died in a previous life. So, time is the medium by which everyone, within which and by which everyone receives the due results of their activities. No one can escape. Whatever we do good, whatever we do bad, that result will come. So if we're thinking, well, I'm doing good, but I'm suffering, why is that? Don't mind, you'll get your good result in future. And if you're doing bad and thinking I'm getting away with it, don't think you can get away. Time will catch up with us. And also time, there's so many aspects of this. Time is unpredictable. We don't know what will happen in future. Just like them, there must be many people in Syria now who you probably can't believe what's going on. They spent their life quite peacefully, and then just in the last few years, the whole country's been completely chaotic and full of violence. So many deaths. There's probably no one in Syria who's alive, who doesn't have a relative or friend, at least one who's been killed or maimed. Even in Northern Ireland it was like that, when the violence was much less than here, than in Syria. So, time, in due course of time, time catches up with us. Time caught up with Duryodhana. He thought, I'll send the Pandavas to the forest. And then one more year incognito. And then within that time, my position will be very strong and they won't be able to do anything. But the time came. And they came back. And then he had a problem. Time caught up with him. Time catches up with everyone. So that another mean. These are all various, slightly different perspectives on time. He who measures, make a point here. We're talking about time, but we're talking about Krishna. Time awards the in due course of time we get the results of our pious and impious actions. That is ultimately Krishna. It's not just some impersonal force. This is the point to be understood. He measures, he sees everyone's karma and he gives the result in due course of time. When everything is as Krishna sees, just when it is at the right point, just like a boil. I'm going here because I had it becomes big and big and it just comes to a point and it bursts. Just the point comes when the pain becomes intense, then it bursts, becomes pakka in some Indian languages. And then it bursts. So that's the nature of time. We can see in the world at the present time, things are just cooking up, cooking up, cooking up. And the explosion is to come. In the course of my research for Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, I read some newspaper articles from the late 1930s in English, and it described how the clouds of war are again gathering over Europe. They knew it was coming. It was just obvious to everyone there's going to be a war, a huge war again. And it was as if they could see, it's just like you see the clouds gathering and then the lightning and the thunderstorm, and you know there's going to be rain. So in the same way they could see, but they couldn't stop it. And it looks like it's the way that it's going again now. There's the Western countries provoking Russia, although they say Russia's provoking them. Who's to say? What's the truth? Find out after the war. If there's anyone left to write the history, that will become the truth, whichever side they were on. As Winston Churchill said, history will judge me kindly because I intend to write it. And he did. He wrote a history of the Second World War. And guess what? He was one of the heroes. One of the main heroes. So in the nature of time, also some people are elevated and considered to be very great. Some people are, and their contribution isn't recognized. It may be in many fields that someone who doesn't do much work gets the credit for doing something, and someone else who does all the work hardly gets any credit. And we often find that people who don't do the work, but they manipulate so they get the credit. And we see in our own Krishna conscious movement also, there are so many devotees who have done tremendous service, but hardly anyone knows them, nor are they advertising themselves. And there are others who every little thing they make sure everyone knows, and they exaggerate it. But Krishna knows. And there's a story from the New Testament. Jesus, he said that there were these people giving lots of money in the temple. They're making a big show of it, how much money they were giving. And there was a poor widow. She had only very little money and she gave almost all of it and no one cared for her. It was only a very small amount, but for her it was a lot. And Jesus said, telling this parable, Jesus told many parables, that those who made a show of giving and made sure everyone knew how much they were giving, they got their reward in this world, but the widow will get her reward in heaven. They already got there. By giving charity, they wanted some reward. They wanted the reward of being recognized in society. So they got it. And the widow just did it for love of God. So she will get her reward, what she wanted. Yayata mang prapadyante tangas tataiva pajamyaham. So Krishna reciprocates with everyone. These are all, when we understand that time is Krishna, is not just some impersonal, well, in one sense it is, it's stated to be the impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it's completely entwined with his, it's inseparable from his consciousness of understanding everything and everyone. Desire to cause. Yeah. He is particularly time for those who are inimical toward him. Those who are devotees, they cross over time. Their time as a medium. Time in this material world becomes a medium which carries them to eternal time. And for materialists who have so much ambitions, who identify with themselves with the body and all the possessions that they think they possess, then time is death. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. Krishna's form of death takes everything away. So it acts differently. Just as in this material world, for the devotee, everything acts to help to bring him to Krishna. And because the demons don't want to go to Krishna, everything acts to keep them away from Krishna. So time also, in due course of time, one devotee should have the faith that if I go on chanting Hare Krishna, that in due course of time, Krishna will bring me to him. And time also goes imperceptibly. We don't notice how we're growing old. We don't notice. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of we're in a plane. This is obviously an example which he gave from his own experience. At one point in his life, he started regularly traveling by plane. He said, you may be in the plane and you may not even notice it's taken off. You look out of the window and you're up in the sky. It was on the ground. Oh, we're already so far up. You looked out of the window at the airport and you saw all the airport around, and then you're reading or something, and then you look, you don't even notice, and already, oh, we're up in the sky. So we may not notice. Time is going on imperceptibly. We may not notice how we're advancing in Krishna consciousness also. We also may not notice how we're falling in Maya. So be careful. Sadhu Savdhan. Be careful. Time imperceptibly takes away our life. We don't realize, oh, now I'm so old. What happened to my life? Where did it go? And it's gone. You can't bring it back again. And we should use the time that we have. Utilize the time. Kalayati iti. Kalayati iti kala. One who measures. Another meaning of kala, which is absolutely clearly appropriate to Krishna. Kala means Krishna. Krishna means black, kala means black. It's a common word in these North Indian languages. Kala means black. And specifically, at least according to the dictionary definition, it means a deep bluish black. So there you go. Krishna is kala. Generally, if we call someone kala, that may be some kind of insult. Or it may mean something very... because of the aura, we say someone, they're in a black mood, or they have a black face, at least in English, if it means they look very depressed. That's because of the aura, that when someone becomes depressed or in tamagun, then the aura around them becomes very dark blue or black. But Krishna is Shama Sundara, beautifully black. So there are some thoughts about Kala. It is a major topic which someone could spend their whole life researching and never come, then you'll never come to an end of it, because, well, we will, because Kala will bring an end to it, but the topic itself, we can't come to the end of it unless we accept Krishna. That's all right, this much we understood. By our philosophical speculation, we could investigate this topic, the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the sideways, the backs, the forwards. But ultimately we have to accept that this is a principle that is beyond our ability to understand. And yet we take it for granted. The next name given is Parameshti. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the meaning of this as he who removed the burden of the earth. I didn't give Baladev Vidyabhushan's meaning for Kala because it's the same as which the other acharyas do. But this is an Ishta means that which is desired. Parama means that which is on top, supreme. But the acharyas all give the meaning of Parameshti as he who is above everything, the one on top. This in Bhagavatam we'll often find this name is given for Brahma, because he's on top of the universe, but then on top of him is Krishna. So ultimately, this is a name for Krishna. So the meaning of this name is given as he who resides in the supreme abode, which for the Sri Vaishnav commentators means Sri Vaikuntha. They see it as topmost. And another meaning that's given is that he who resides in the supreme core of the heart. Now that's something else which could be investigated. There are descriptions in the Upanishads, in the Bhagavatam, throughout Shastra, of the sky in the heart. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also speaks about that. Hridgagan, the sky of the heart. Udita tapana haila vasta jengalopana. That penultimate. Jivera kalyana shadana kam jagate ashe madhur nam abhidya timira tapana rupe hridgagani viraje. He says about the holy name has come to this world for the benefit of the jivas here. Is like the holy name is like the sun which has arisen in the sky of the heart to drive out the ignorance therein. So that's one of the things you can research, maybe if you get any time. That's much spoken about in the Upanishads. The sky in the heart. What exactly does that mean? But the acharyas, when they speak of it, they don't qualify it. That means seems that they all seem to know what they mean by it. That presumably also when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Hridesha Juna Tishtati, in the region of the heart, the Ishvara, he resides there, within the heart of all living beings. So these are meanings for Parameshti. Then the next name, Parigraha. Graha in means who takes a hold of, just like we have the word in astrology, graha. Sometimes that's translated as planet, but it literally means that who seizes, who takes a hold, who appears to have an influence on us. So one who takes hold of or who receives. And pari gives the meaning of all around or everything. Baldev Vidya Bhushan gives the meaning, the demigods are not supreme, but Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. How he gives that derivation, as with many of his names, many of the meanings Baladev gives, he doesn't explicate how he comes to that. We can say that the demigods, they are concerned with influencing, each one of them has some influence on certain areas, they have jurisdiction over certain areas of universal management, but Krishna all around, Krishna oversees everything, so he's supreme. So that's one of the meanings given by the acharyas. He has everything in the universe under his control. He's got a, in English we say he's got a, if someone has a hold on something, so he has a hold on everything. It means he's in control of everything. Not just a little department here or there, or even a major department. Even some demigod may be in charge and of some major department. Ultimately, Krishna is in control of everything. Another meaning is that he accepts that everything comes to him. So he takes everything or everyone with him. And the example is given of Sri Ramchandra Bhagavan. When he left this world, he took all the residents of Ayodhya with him. And Krishna also, although none of the acharyas give this here, when he was in Vrindavan, he showed the residents of Vrindavan the Vaikuntha world and showed them they are all going to go there. So he takes everyone with him. And if we take the meaning of Kala to be the destroyer, then he also takes everyone. Either you take them, everyone is taken out of this body, out of their present body, and he ultimately takes them, he takes everyone out of their present situation, either to another material situation or to the spiritual situation. But everything happens within him, by him. There are several verses in Shastra, including in Bhagavatam, which use all the grammatical cases, that everything is done within him, by him, for him, to him, under him, all by his command. Nothing is independent of Krishna. So he takes all with him. Those who take shelter in him, they can do so, or those who are devotees, let's put it simply, they can catch him in all different ways. He's approachable in all different ways, by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasa. All the senses can be engaged and we can catch Krishna. By all, he agrees to be caught by all these different methods, by not exactly by Shanta. Well, he makes himself available also to the in Dasya Rati, in Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, Krishna, in all different relationships, devotees can catch him also. They can catch him. He will agree to be caught in the heart of the devotee. Also, Krishna, he accepts the offerings of the devotees, patrang, pushpang, palang, toyam. Wherever we are, if we offer with love and devotion to Krishna, he will accept it. He doesn't say, I'm already full, I had so much to eat already. So many people are offering. So many people are offering, I've got into this, and it's too much. But Krishna can accept, he can go on accepting. Yeah, he never says no. We have limited capacity. Krishna has unlimited capacity to accept not only the offerings of food of his devotees, but the love of his devotees. As limited living beings, we have a limited capacity. How many people can we know and reciprocate with directly? We may say we love everyone, but we can't directly enter into a relationship with more than a few people. But Krishna can and does. So he accepts everyone. It means he's ready to accept everyone into a personal relationship. He had 16,108 wives, and he was intimate with every one of them. He was spent most of his time every day with each of the wives. That's possible for Krishna, not possible for everyone. So, what other points are here? He also accepts everyone. This example is given of Rama. He doesn't consider what is someone's social status. Ravana was very high class, son of a rishi who went out into the world and made a success of himself. If he'd remained a Brahmin, he could have been a high class Brahmin, but he decided he wanted to be a world ruler, and he did good. Conquered over so many people and developed a big kingdom. Nowadays he'd be praised in Time magazine like anything. He's a great self-made man, great success. But Krishna didn't like him, Rama didn't like him, but he liked Guha, the king, if you want to call it, of a bunch of savages, because Guha loved him. And Rama accepted the monkeys. You may say, well, he didn't have anyone else. That was also the arrangement of Kala. Kala, Krishna, he outsources his functions for his Leela to his Leela Shakti, who arranges that his pastimes to take place in the course of the time of the world, and makes him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seem so helpless that he has to depend on a pack of monkeys. But actually, that he is the Supreme Lord. He can interrelate with whoever he wants, but he chooses to accept devotion from whoever offers it. He's a genuine person. He is the primeval loving person. Love, generally we find if someone has money, they have friends. They have prestige. They're considered important. But then who cares for someone who has no money, who has no prestige? But Krishna, he cares if we care for him. And Krishna doesn't care for your finery, your wealth, your power. This is all given by him, by his Kala Shakti, by time, his energy of time, and will be taken away in due course of time. And it's ridiculous anyway. It's just so insignificant in comparison to Krishna's unlimited opulence. So Krishna, he accepts the devotion of his devotees. He's the acceptor, but he doesn't. Although this name is given, he is an all-around receiver, acceptor, but he's discriminating also. He, in one sense, he accepts the even the sinful activities of impious beings. In one sense, because he responds to that by, not directly, but through his external energy, he awards punishment. So in one sense he accepts everything, but he discriminates. The pure love of his devotees he accepts, personally. And the enviousness and sinfulness of non-devotees, he sees it, he measures it. As time, he awards the results of that, but he himself remains aloof from it. He has no interest in it whatsoever. For the devotees, although he accepts everything, they give everything to Krishna. They know that everything is meant for him. They give everything to him. And in this way, he is the sole refuge for the devotees. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there today. Time is up. Hare Krishna. Any points about this? Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a huge, huge topic.
There is a description that all planets are linked by the ropes of wind to the pole star. They are all rotating because there is a kala chakra above, and then they go to this object. That's therefore that the world is rotating, and pole star is rotating on its own axis.
Kala chakra, yeah.
And that's expansion of Sudarshan chakra on the world.
That's what we might call a physical object? The wheel of time. It's an orbit. It could be mathematically constructed.
Yeah, and then they give chakra.
The Kala chakra. We can find by astronomy the Kala chakra and make a mathematical description of it. Kalagni, the fire of time, Kalagni. In due course of time, that flames up and destroys the whole universe. Yeah.
All the time, basically, this material is roasted from below. Fire is on, but not full flesh.
Yeah, it's on a low flame. The low flame, still we're burning in that. Diba nishi hiaja shangsharab bashanale. Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to make a point. Since I've been here every morning, whoever's leading the Mangalarti Kirtan begins with singing Sangsara Dava Nalalira, which doesn't really have any meaning. It's one continuous word. Sangsara Dava Nala. You have to say it as one word. Otherwise it's something like saying Go Kulachandra. You have to say it together. Okay, I hope you got that point. Yeah, okay, so we'll finish here now. All glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Oh, wait a minute, we got some more here. Yeah?
The relative time of Brahma, time of Manas, time of different planets, and both connections to the consciousness also.
Very good point. Yeah, it is a massive topic. It could be, like I say, you could spend your whole life meditating on time and understanding different aspects of it, and it'll still remain mysterious. And it's one of those subjects. The more you delve into it, the more you understand. The more you find there are aspects of it, it's that you won't understand. So you can end up being the world expert on time and know more about it than anyone, and yourself realize that you know very little about it at all, because it is such a mysterious topic. We don't usually think of that. How does Kala act upon devotees? Well, I already touched that slightly in the class, but Kala in this world facilitates the devotee's transition from this world to the spiritual world. Whereas for materialists, it facilitates their ongoing incarceration within this world. That's it in brief. Okay. It's time to finish the class. You're all sitting here bewildered, wondering what's been talked about here. It's not very understandable. Well, I hope something was understood. I have been in classes where you sit through the whole class and you listen to it, and at the end you wonder, what actually did they say? There's nothing really... I shouldn't be so critical, but I have had experience. There are some people, or you can read a whole page and there's nothing really said. It's just a string of words. Whatever they had to say could have been compressed into about 3 words. But they managed to string it all out. These kind of books are excellent if you have difficulty getting to sleep at night. Soporific stories. Okay, Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.